Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher, and thanks for joining us for our very first live remote broadcast, this time from the Cup of Joe on the Cap in the Short North. And the location is not a random choice. Tonight at 8 p.m., WOSU Public Media and the Columbus Metropolitan Library will premiere the first of a six-part documentary series, Columbus Neighborhoods, The Short North. We're here today to learn more about the series and the Short North, so we planted ourselves here at Cup of Joe's on the Cap in a once-again celebrated neighborhood short of the OSU campus and north of downtown Columbus to chat. Columbus Neighborhoods, The Short North, is a culmination of many months of planning by many people, but if you were to ask, who did this? The only answer could be producer Mary Rathke, and she's with us today to talk about her baby. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you.
Also with us at the Cup of Joe is Cindy Gaylord. She's the WOSU's Arts Programming Executive Producer. Cindy, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Joining us a little bit later is the fellow that probably is credited more than anybody for making the Short North what it is today, Sandy Wood, developer, and as one journalist put it, the unofficial godfather of the district. We're looking forward to talking to him after the first break. Sandy, thanks for being here. I guess, Mary, the first question is, what was your assignment in the first place when they when they asked you to do this? What did they ask you to do?
They were looking for a producer to produce a program on the Short North. And basically my job was to produce, direct, and edit the program.
So did were you doing the videography and the whole kit and caboodle, or?
I directed the videographers. So basically I would set up the interviews, and we would go out with a crew and tape those interviews.
How did you even know where to start?
I didn't. So this started 2 years ago in January of 2008, and I just spent about 4 months actually just researching the area and trying to figure out what it is that we wanted to cover and who knew what. We hired Ed Lentz, and he came on board as our historian for the project probably about March or May that year.
Okay. Was there some kind of meeting or public meeting that you had last spring, or maybe it was the spring before that, to get comments or suggestions from the community?
Right. We did a community storytelling day, and basically we invited the community to come out, people who had stories about the Short North, to, you know, have them come out and just, you know, tell us their stories. They get to they got to talk about what they wanted to talk about.
When you started this project, were you already pretty familiar with the Short North?
I was. I lived in the Short North in the late 80s, and so I got
to
see a little.
Days.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It really was. You know?
Before the arches.
Right. Right, exactly. And, you know, there was a lot of energy, and, you know, Sandy can talk a little bit more about that later. But it was, yeah, it was a little run down, but, you know, it was close to campus where I was going to school at the time.
And it was cool.
And it was cool. Yeah. It really was. Yeah. You know, I kind of grew up here.
Cindy Gaylord, what... Tell us more about the overall project.
Sure.
and what it's all about.
This is an accumulation of what came out of the Mayor's Commission on the Bicentennial. That happened a couple of years ago, and we, Tom Ryland, our general manager, was part of that. And they sat down with community leaders and decided, well, what are we going to celebrate in 2012? What are we going to actually say about Columbus? And what came out of that is that our natural resource is our neighborhoods. Clintonville, Short North, German Village, you know, King Lincoln. All of these are just fantastic. The reason I think people love Columbus is that these neighborhoods not only have architectural differences, they have kind of a different buzz to each one of those. So Tom came back and said, hey, gang, which is all of us, we're going to make a show. Not only
let's
we're going to
have a show.
Yeah, let's have a show. Not only we're going to do one show, we're going to do six of them. And we all kind of put our heads together. And what came out of that was kind of this multifaceted project. One of those is broadcast, which is we'll have six documentaries, the first of which is The Short North, which is tonight. Then we have a huge website, which is columbusneighborhoods.org. Mm-hmm. And it will it allows you, the citizen of anywhere, any Columbus neighborhood, not just the six that we have decided to highlight, go on. Post your stories. Do you know the kind of house you're living in? Is it one of those Sears houses that you ordered, right? Is it, you know, pre-Revolutionary War? Is it, you know, so, Revolutionary, I'm talking about Civil War, rather.
I knew what you meant.
Yeah. Thank God.
We're going way back now.
We're going way back. So we created this website, okay, that you now can post anything you want to on that website. Pictures, stories.
And it doesn't have to be just from one of the six neighborhoods.
No, it's anywhere you want to. And then what we did was we created these community days where people can come out. And originally it was so that we could include those stories on the documentary. But they kind of took on a life of their own. So that's starting to filter into the website. Okay, so it's really this massive celebration of the neighborhoods here. And I want to give Mary kudos because we did come up with a plan that said, okay, we're going to do six documentaries. Mary, here you go. Have one. And she went, the first one. And we had no idea what it was going to be. We had no idea how it was going to take shape. We had no idea who the main people were. But Mary took that challenge on and put together, and I will say redefined documentary filmmaking. You know, this is not the Ken Burns documentary. It doesn't move along at a snail's pace. I think you've seen it.
Yes.
You understand it.
Yes.
It actually packs a lot of history, a lot of entertainment, a lot of insight, and a lot of inspiration in 1 hour. And I think that's Mary's vision. And she is one of the best producers I've ever worked with. So,
if you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest, Cindy Gaylord, you just heard her talking. She's WOSU's Arts Programming Executive Producer, and also Mary Rathke, the producer of WOSU and Columbus Metropolitan Library's first of six-part documentary series. It's called Columbus Neighborhoods, The Short North. We're here today to learn more about that and The Short North. When we return, we're not taking a break quite yet, but we are taking calls today. It is, our first live remote broadcast. So, and we have been all geared up to take calls as well, and we'll do that after the first break. For now, Mary, a big part of this for me, the graphics were super cool, but a big part of it was the music. Mm-hmm. Throughout the entire documentary, I kept wondering, who's singing that? Where's that from? They sound sort of familiar. Tell us about how you decided to do that.
We were looking to attract a younger audience, and one idea I had was to bring in local music. You know, it's a real good reflection of what's going on at this time in our community. And so with the help of our marketing department, we put out the word that we were looking for local music, and we still are. So at this point, you know, we had dozens of people send in music. We just had tons of music come in. And it was amazing music. It was incredible. And, you know, to have such, you know, great talent here locally and to have them just generously give their music to us to use in the documentary was incredible.
Did you have to reproduce a lot of it? Re-record?
No, we didn't re-record anything. Actually, everything came in on DVDs or just, you know, WAV files. And I just put everything into the edit suite. I dumped everything we got right into there because I wanted to try different things. You know, if I just listened to one song and I thought, oh, that might work, and then bring it in, I was kind of limiting myself. So what I discovered was as I brought in all this other music, I just started, you know, laying different things into the timeline, and all of a sudden things started working that I would have never chosen before. But it was kind of nice because this way then the community got to be, you know, more involved in basically what's in our story.
How many songwriters, how many musicians were involved in all of that?
In the Short North program, we have 50 songs, 33 different musicians.
Right, and 50 songs in an hour, that just gives you a little bit of an idea. That's basically almost, you know, just a little less than a song a minute. So that's
it's
action-packed.
Yeah.
Action-packed. And then the graphics at the very beginning, that's going to be with every segment.
Yes, the opening animation was made by Space Junk Media, an animation group here in town. And basically it's a fly-through of the six neighborhoods that we're doing programs on. And it's incredible. You guys will have to
It's a lot of
have
fun.
To watch it. Yeah.
How did you decide what to leave on the proverbial editing room floor?
It was heartbreaking because if you look at the neighborhoods that we cover in the Short North, it's not just the Short North. It's also Victorian Village, Italian Village, Harrison West, Flytown, the Thurber Village area, and the Union Station. So you got six neighborhoods or stories. And if you divide that into an hour, that's about 7 minutes apiece. So things we left out were things like individual businesses. We didn't really get to talk a lot about that, like the Goody Boy restaurant, things like that. people, things like that. It was more overall stories that kind of happened throughout the whole neighborhood.
And sort of drove the history of the neighborhood.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of those things, of course, is the Union Station. It was a huge part of the neighborhood and its eventual demolition. We're going to listen to a cut right now from the documentary. It's about the discussion of the rise and fall of Union Station. In this clip, Kathy Mastkana, or Kane, from the Columbus Landmarks Foundation and Nancy Ritchie from Benjamin D. Ritchie and Company discuss the loss of a great landmark in the Short North.
Clearly, the demolition of Union Station was the straw that broke the camel's back.
It just seemed very sad. It made me think of how proud the city was when it was built. It was a very important building by a very important American architect, and it was gone.
Marion City, how much time was devoted? How did you decide how much time to devote to the Union Station story?
Well, I think that when you talk about a documentary of this length, you look for stories that you can weave in and out from the very beginning to the very end. And Union Station was huge in our history. It was recreated three times.
Mm-hmm.
And so you basically look at the timeline, and when it all kind of comes together, you see what floats to the top, what is the most compelling, and then you just start trimming from there. I know it's unscientific. That's why it's art. you just start trimming and seeing what actually floats through the entire documentary. So you'll see the Union Station or the actual train station at the very beginning, and some of the stories, like it blocked High Street. The trains blocked High Street, and therefore...
Boy, there were some traffic jams.
And there were some traffic jams. There were deaths along there because the train would run into, carriages, things like that. So it is a part of our history that just keeps going. And now, because where we are right now, the CAP was recreated or reimagined, that looks just like the old arcade.
That's right. We are in the Cup of Joe on the CAP in the Short North. We are here to talk about the new documentary. It'll premiere tonight. It's a collaboration between WOSU Public Media and Columbus Metropolitan Library. It's called Columbus Neighborhoods. In the first segment, The Short North. And we're going to talk more about that when we return. If you'd like to join us, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at wosu.org. We'll be right back with All Sides from Ann Fisher in just a minute.
Iraq's weekend elections are a major test for the government in Baghdad and the one in Washington.
Have we succeeded in leaving behind a reasonably stable, reasonably functioning country?
I'm Neil Conan. A U.S. troop withdrawal on schedule depends on Iraqis settling disputes with words in parliament. The high stakes of Iraq's elections. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And you're listening to Talk of the Nation. It will be here later this afternoon at 2 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher this morning. 44 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1020. Sunshine today and a high of 53. Clouds tonight and a low of 34.
Support for WOSU comes from the estate of Donald R. Glancy, whose life was enriched by public radio and television, and whose bequest seeks to encourage others to discover WOSU Public Media.
All Sides with Ann Fisher, live from the Short North, continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher and Amy Jurovich-White. We're in the Short North. It's our first live remote broadcast, this time from Cup of Joe. It's on the CAP. CAP that was made to look like or resemble Union Station, which is what we were talking about just before the break. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Also joining us now in this segment is Sandy Wood. He is one of the original, probably the original, I don't even know how to describe
maybe
you.
Maybe the oldest.
developers of the Short North. And this goes back way to the late 70s, early 80s when it was a twinkle in your eye. Sandy, how did it even become a twinkle?
Well, I lost my job.
Okay.
I had been opportunity. A banker for over 20 years and went to work for a friend, Bob Murtha and Paul Younger, in a retirement development, real estate development company. And I sold the company. So at that point, I sat down with Bob, and he said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, eventually I'd like to go into real estate. He said, let's do it. So he became my first investor, and I had was doing real estate on the side in the Short North already, so we started a company.
So the Short North, what did you see in it? Because there wasn't a lot to see back then.
That's right, except there was a lot to see because the location was so strategic between downtown and OSU and Patel. It was a great location for something to happen, and I'd seen a similar redevelopment area in Portland, Maine, which kind of inspired me that change could happen.
I was reading an article from the Columbus Dispatch from, I don't know, like 2006 or so, and you were telling the reporter, Debbie Cabolas, that you thought of the Short North as sort of the soul of Columbus. What do you mean?
There are two kinds of redevelopment or development that happen. One is top-down, where somebody big with a lot of money comes into town and builds something. The other kind is when nobody has any money, and that was us. We were bottom-up, and we developed our own soul as we worked together, performed partnerships in the neighborhood with City of Columbus, with residents of the area. I call them urban homesteaders who originally moved into the area because of cheap housing they could buy, and we all wanted to work together to make the neighborhood a better place to live.
I read back in the 1980s that when the renovations began or when folks started, individuals and folks like you came in, it was actually difficult to get contractors to come into the neighborhood because of the crime.
I'm sure that's right, and I remember it. We had our own tradesmen, and we did our own, acted as general contractor, and actually had our own construction crew from the start.
You know, I was thinking about the arches, and they're finally all lit up in all their glory, and I was admiring them last night when I was here helping get ready. I did help a little bit, I think. Oh, yeah, I'm getting the nods. I thought about them, and I thought there were a lot of people were making fun of them at first because they didn't light up right off the bat and all that kind of stuff. And then I thought, the more I thought about that, I thought you've probably taken a lot of ribbing over the years, way back when, for your vision.
Oh, I probably have, yes.
What has been the biggest struggle for you?
Oh, the biggest problem was that I didn't have any money and trying to get things financed. And the biggest opportunity was the opportunity to do partnerships with the people in the vicinity. Initially with the residents, the urban homesteaders, and eventually with tenants who came in, and entrepreneurial tenants who staked their lives and their reputations and their careers on making this Short North successful. So it really is a model of what can happen when everybody works together to try to improve their neighborhood. It's really neat.
In the documentary, you mentioned that, wow, you hadn't seen some of the art that emerged, like, for instance, during the first gallery hops and that sort of thing, that it surprised you what happened in a way.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, we took one step at a time. We didn't know where we were going. And maybe that's what made it very genuine. But some of this, Spangler Cummins brought things into her gallery that were just mind-boggling to me.
Just to remind our listeners, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher, and we are doing our first live remote today from the Cup of Joe in the Short North on the Cap. We're talking about the new WOSU documentary series that will be premiered tonight with Columbus Neighborhoods, The Short North. You want to check that out at 8 o'clock tonight. In the meantime, we're chatting with the producers. The producer, Mary Rathke, is with us. Mary, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
And also Cindy Gaylord. She's the WOSU Arts Programming Executive Producer. Cindy, thanks for being here.
You bet.
And we were just talking with Sandy Wood. He's one of the original developers of the area with the vision that even surprised him, you know,
yes.
When it started to take shape. We're going to take a couple calls right now. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Ellen, you're on the air. Hi, Ellen. Ellen?
This is another Emmy winner for you. I have one question, and I'm wondering how long you spent shooting the project, and, of course, how long the editing took on the project.
We started in January of 2008, just researching. And then from there, I would say we taped for about 9 months and spent about a year editing. So it's been a kind of a long process. One of the things that held us back on the editing is finding the images. The images really were important. You know, nobody wants to just see people sitting there talking about, an event or a building. They want to actually see the photography. And we worked really, really hard to find those photos. The Ohio Historical Society was just tremendous in that. I would say about 2/3 of the photos that you see on this program are from the Historical Society. WBNS provided a majority of the films.
Which is fantastic and pretty unusual.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it was a great partnership between us and, a commercial station. And that's what this whole project was partnerships.
Does that help, Ellen?
Great. Thanks. I'm looking forward to tonight's showing.
At 8 p.m. on WOSU.
And can I just interject a little bit here? Mary sounds so calm when she says, oh, yeah, we did, a year's worth of filming. It's a little bit more loose than that. It's Mary knew that she had the short north to do, and it was a pretty day. She would just run down to the videographers and say, could you please go get this shot? So there was a lot of that. And Jason Perkins is the our director of photography over there, and he has just done an amazing job. So there's been a lot of, I don't know where it's going to go in the documentary, but could you please go get gallery hop one more time? Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of that, and it's just been, if it's a pretty day, we're out with a camera.
There are some very beautiful days in Goodell Park as well. Hey, Bill, you're on the air. Hello, Bill.
Victorian Village and have for the last 25 years, and I remember when I moved in there, I didn't know it, but there was a person living under my back porch.
Oh, God.
It's one of those quaint stories, right, Bill?
Pretty amusing, but what has happened in Victorian Village in the last 25 years is absolutely amazing, and it's due to the people who live there, that they care about the neighborhood, they care about their houses. Sandy has done a phenomenal job. I've seen a lot of his work. But I want to put a shout-out to Ms. Duda, Deb, who probably everybody knows. There's a couple of things that she does, the Duda Parade that happens every July 4th. And, of course, everybody should be reminded that if it rains on July 4th, then the parade happens on July the 3rd, of course. And also there's – yeah, that's pretty funny. But also there's Urban Croquet that is a fundraiser for the Duda Parade that happens every year. And it happens behind the Electrical Workers Union. And it's a bunch of teams get together. They can be from anywhere in the city. And we all play croquet in the grassy knoll behind the Electrical Workers Union. It's a phenomenal time.
Bill, what do you think it is about the folks that I kind of think of them as like sod busters, that took over Victorian Village and turned it around? What do you think it is about them?
It's just the people who moved into the neighborhood cared about the neighborhood. And when I moved there in 1986, and I remember there wasn't really a lot happening there, but just then all of a sudden it seemed like everybody who moved there cared about the houses and redid the houses and made them spectacular. Just made the neighborhood fantastic.
Okay, Bill, thanks for your call.
I appreciate it very much. Thanks for the show.
You bet. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. We are talking about the Short North today. We are in the Cup of Joe on the Cap in the Short North, just spitting distance almost from the arches. They're not lit up right now, but they're out there, and they do work. There was a day when they didn't. I was surprised that the Short North Special Improvements District was only established 10 years ago.
That's right, and that's an organization of the property owners on High Street. The residents had organized themselves into the Victorian and Italian Village societies and They had their commissions, and the business association had its organization, and the property owners were the last group to get organized.
What was the first project?
The first project of the SID was the arches. And that took 5 or 6 years, I guess, long years.
You know, the city worked really hard with you on that. Was the city with you from the beginning, from the 80s?
Yes, they sure were. And it was a partnership with the city of Columbus to get those things done.
But I mean, the whole district, you've always felt like
absolutely, it. Absolutely,
absolutely. Sam Hendren of WOSU did a report about the kind of the idea that the arts district could become a victim of its own success. In other words, some people cannot afford the rents as the higher revenue bars and restaurants move in. The arts can't sustain themselves as easily. Sandy, what about that? Because I know that you work really hard to keep your folks and your tenants in place.
Well, I think the partnerships we formed were all trying to make the world a little better than it was. And one of the things we wanted to do was to bring, like, public art to Columbus, where we thought it really had been neglected here through the years. And that meant when we brought Judy Hoberg's into the neighborhood, it really added a cultural value, I think. And I think the entire neighborhood has embraced that. They've formed their own organizations within the neighborhood to support public art and to make us different and to bring the arts out so that we could all enjoy them.
Let's listen to another cut and get back to the Union Station, because that is that a major thread in the documentary that's woven through the documentary. Here we're going to listen to historic preservation consultant Nancy Ritchie from Benjamin D. Ritchie and Company say something great actually came out of the Union Station demolition. A new organization was formed.
The Columbus Landmarks Foundation was formed in 1977, really on the heels of the Union Station demolition. And it was started because a group of citizens got together. We called ourselves Citizens for the Union Station Arch, and we raised money to preserve and rebuild the arch. But out of that grew the idea that there needed to be a nonprofit citywide organization that really advocated preservation.
How big of a deal was that? See, when I was watching the documentary both times, number one, I got something different out of it both times, but there's a sense that this one neighborhood, or this collection of neighborhoods known as the Short North, had a wide-ranging impact on the entire city. It wasn't, so when you're telling just this story, you're telling a story about the city as well.
Well, I think that it was an accumulation of all the right people at the right time and the right kind of disaster that happened. So they were able to focus their efforts to come together and say, you know, we want to preserve in this particular instance the Union Arch, which is downtown at this point,
over in the Arena District.
In the Arena District, and I think that it was just a burgeoning idea that that was coming together. Remember too that the German Village was at this point coming back from the brink. So German Village was also a really great revitalization example that was going on. So it wasn't like it had never happened before. It was happening in our city, and everyone came together and said, you know, let's really do this. Let's create an organization that we can not only just preserve what we have, but create something that's new out of it.
And it's still, you know, operating today, obviously. Video of the destruction of the Union Station is pretty shocking, and I imagine that's something that you got from WBNS.
I did.
Tell us how you used that.
Well, we really I really wanted moving images of the Union Station, and we looked, you know, really hard to find that. The one thing that I did use was there was a background noise which was part of the film that was almost distorted, and I actually incorporated that into the using of that film. And I think it gave kind of that eerie sense, you know, that something really wrong was happening. So for me, I just, you know, that film was just invaluable. Yeah,
yeah, it's a very emotional. Sandy,
yeah.
Do you remember that?
Oh yes. I when I bought my first building in the Short North, with investors, I remember driving up North High Street and hearing John Galbraith on WOSU talking about redevelopment in Columbus, and he said we ought to tear everything down between downtown and OSU and start over. And there was a mentality there that is prevalent even today. And so I really believe the partnerships that formed were formed around the idea we can be better. We can do something better for the city and for our neighborhood. And preservationists came in, and you know, the architectural review commissions, which are scorned, yeah, and of course I argue with all the time because I want a different color than they do. But because we all worked together, even though we were different and we're coming from different places, it has worked, I think, and that's what made it a bottom-up redevelopment.
Let's take another phone call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello? Hi.
Hi. You're on the air. I'm sorry, I can't see your name, so I apologize. But you are on the air.
Hello, I'm Ann.
Hello. You're Ann, so am I.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I didn't realize I was on the air. I just wanted to comment that I was hoping that the documentary would at least include something about Kent Rigsby or Rigsby's Restaurant. I've been in wine sales since the late 80s, and I was calling on Rigsby's in the late 80s, and I remember the neighborhood, and it was actually very scary to just make a sales call during the day, and I feel like he was extraordinarily brave in going into this area and starting a fine dining establishment.
You know, that's a good point, Ann, and there really aren't the restaurants in the bar scene, except for the Short North Tavern, isn't delved into a lot. Cindy?
Well, one of the limitations of doing an hour documentary is that there's a lot of things that we leave out, and unfortunately this is one of the stories that you won't be able to see. We had long discussions about buildings.
Yeah.
You know, what buildings should we include? How should we include that? What we did was we looked at the stories of the human movement through the area. So Flytown mm-hmm. is one of the major stories there. How people got to Columbus, which is Union Station. How we got Goodell Park, that type of thing. When you look at the very, very specific things, no, we don't. But this is what we wanted to do with our website because we realized an hour is just too limiting. So,
if you try to do everything.
And if you try to do everything, it becomes a dissertation, mm-hmm. not necessarily a documentary. Mm-hmm. So what we hope that you will do is go to columbusneighborhoods.org and post your particular stories about Rigsby's, and if you have any pictures from that time, that would be fantastic. Something that we would love to share. Well, that's all right. The story in itself.
Coming to meet me at Rigsby's, and they were equally as scared and shocked in the early days with the neighborhood.
We have to take a break right now. But one thing that came out, I think it was from Susan Meyer, director of marketing for WOSU, made the point that everybody's an expert when it
right.
comes to telling this story.
Absolutely. Everybody is an expert. And what we want the documentaries to do is to start the conversation. They are not necessarily going to be the end-all, be-all. It is just a wonderful way to look at a neighborhood, remind us of what the stories were, and then complete the conversation at the website.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Ann.
Thank you.
Again, that website is columbusneighborhoods.org. We're going to have to take a short break. We're going to take a short break, and that website's columbusneighborhoods.org. If you want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820.
Corporate partners help provide support for WOSU 820. Your business can join them and reach an educated, engaged, appreciative audience every day. Your business will also be associated with a trusted source for national and local news, arts, and culture. For more information, contact Christine Schottich at 247-4469. And thanks for supporting WOSU 820, NPR News.
And this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News, broadcasting from Cup of Joe on the Cap in the Short North. In hour two of the program, in just about 20 minutes, we'll hear about the role of art galleries in development of the Short North Arts District and the importance of art to urban living. That's on All Sides with Ann Fisher, beginning at 11 right here on WOSU. And WOSU Public Media and J.P. Morgan Chase present Columbus Neighborhoods. See the premiere of this highly anticipated documentary that tells the story of one of our city's most vibrant and exciting neighborhoods, the Short North. You can watch Columbus Neighborhoods, the Short North, tonight at 8, only on WOSU-TV. 44 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today and a high of 53. Clouds tonight and a low of 34. More sunshine tomorrow and a high of 58. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820, NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher, and thanks for joining us for our very first live remote broadcast, this time from the Cup of Joe on the Cap in the Short North. We're talking about the Short North today. We're talking about it because WOSU Public Media has produced the first of a six-part documentary series, Columbus Neighborhoods, the Short North. We're here today to learn more about that with WOSU's Arts Programming Executive Director Cindy Gaylord, and also Mary Rathke, who produced the first segment on the Short North, and also Sandy Wood. He's one of the original developers that brought the Short North back to life. Tonight, when folks go to WOSU, they should probably tune in a little earlier. There's a pre-program.
There is. It's at 7:30 tonight. The exciting part of that is you get to see a little bit behind the scenes of what we were doing. You get a little bit more explanation of what's going on. But the big thing is how to post on our website. So it's columbusneighborhoods.org. But it's if you want to get more of a three-dimensional look at this, 7:30 to 8 o'clock, that's when you get to see it. Also, that's when we're going to start our pre-sales of the DVD, which is really a membership to WOSU. It's our thank you gift to you. But that's when we first premiere all of this.
One part about – there's one segment in the documentary. Well, actually, it's another part that kind of weaves through it, and it's about Flytown. Mm-hmm. And it's not here anymore.
Right.
Sandy, do you remember Flytown?
No, that's before me.
Okay. Do you remember the
urban renewal?
The urban
project
renewal
was
and they
about
just
the time I came into Columbus, right?
Okay, and that was pretty common. That was happening all over the country, so no one really thought much about it. But amazingly, they annihilated an entire neighborhood in the Short North District. But the people of that neighborhood come back together every year. We're going to listen to a cut from the documentary and listen to what some of those folks have to say. We could hear about from local historian Ed Lentz first, and he said it was the Flytown was a popular place to live, but not the best place to stay. So let's listen to that now.
The Flytown community is one of those kinds of areas that we call an entry point community. It's where large numbers of low to moderate income people are coming in order to obtain relatively inexpensive housing. Largely rental housing. These tend to be very modest structures, often made of wood, some made of brick. It was an area that essentially had high levels of disease and all sorts of other social problems as well.
And yet it persevered. Tell us about how you decided to weave Flytown into this story.
Well, Flytown, I had heard the name over and over and over again, but very few people knew anything about it. You know, when I moved here in, you know, the late 80s, you know, I was always kind of wondering why the Thurber Village area kind of existed amongst, you know, all the beautiful architecture and Victorian Village. And, you know, as I researched, you know, there was this little community of homes. And you know, basically it was when immigrants came into Columbus, they were looking for work. There was a lot of factories up along the Olentangy River, the railroad, so it attracted, a lot of people. And the name Flytown, the one that everybody likes to talk about, is that the houses flew up so fast, or, you know, that they called it Flytown. So but today we still have several groups of folks that still gather and kind of remember that neighborhood. One is the Flytown Reunion, and this is a group of folks that gather once a year at Goodale Park. And basically, it's just a celebration. They want to pass on their history to their children and anybody who would like to attend and just kind of celebrate with them. And the other group is a Flytown Club, and they meet once a month, and that is over at a local church. And they spend a lot of time doing community service.
We're going to listen to another cut from one about this topic. When Flytown was demolished and the area was revitalized, former Flytown residents Homer Dennis and Wilbur Williams say the people who lived in the area were not told the complete truth. Let's listen to that.
I know there were some promises broken. When people are in charge and they tell you a certain thing, you expect them to live up to their word. And that never happened.
It was a mess because, see, some of these folks have saved these homes for years thinking they're going to sell them and make money off of them. Well, then they said, well, you could be the first ones to move back in. With the rent, you're going to be the first ones to move back in. You ain't making that kind of money. You can't move back in them because you can't afford to pay for them.
That was Wilbur Williams talking about the problem with urban renewal it's not uncommon. It still happens today that it gets gentrified and you can't afford to move back in. You spent quite a bit of time on Flytown. Why is that?
Well, I really felt like those folks needed their say, and to me it was really important that while they were still here, most of these guys are now in their 80s, 90s, that they had a chance to really, voice, their opinion about what happened to their neighborhood. And I don't know, what do you think about it?
I think it's just a wonderful way to include people that don't have a voice. I'm just going to say exactly what you just said. I mean, it's really important to bring those voices to the table. I don't know how Mary found these people. I mean, there are people all over.
You spent a lot of time with them, though, didn't you?
I did.
You know, in the woodworks, you would find these people. She's one of those people that can just attract these kind of wonderful stories. But it really is important to find those stories that no one else is telling, and that's what we're trying to do.
And I think on top of that, too, I think if you think about it, as these people pass on these stories, they go with these folks. And this is something that, when you think about your grandparents and your parents as they're getting up there in years, and I think about it with my parents that, I need to get these stories because my memory, I just don't have a great memory. And if I don't tape these or write these stories down, they're gone. And it's the same thing with all the photography that we had. I can't tell you how many times I had a picture, and it was an amazing picture. It was something here in Columbus, but there was nothing identified on it, and so it was unusable.
Sandy.
I think Columbus has a real gem, a unique gem here. Right outside the convention center, you walk a block up the street and you find all this Flytown, the influence of all these partnerships we've got and all the art that we've established here. And it seems to me that it's important to our whole community what we do with that from here on. I say the Short North changes every year, and try to imagine it 10 years out. I think what we will have 10 years from now is dependent upon what we do this year. And we have a gem that to be burnished and developed, and it's here for us to make something of.
Sandy, what's your favorite part of the documentary? What's
oh,
stuck with
gosh.
You?
I loved it all, so much because Mary did so much research. I want to see it again tonight in order to pick up. It just all...
What surprised you?
All the history that she dug up from somewhere, beginning with Flytown, things I didn't have any idea about. There are all kinds of surprises in it, and there will be for everybody that lives in the Short North, I think.
What about you, Cindy? What surprised you?
Oh, you're going to ask me that, and now I'm going to have to pick and choose. There are several things. One of them is early in the history of Goodall Park, when the volunteers came to join in the Civil War, they came to Goodell Park because that's where the city had to house them. And Mr. Goodell said, no, you are not going to destroy my park. And then that's how Camp Chase was created. They moved all the soldiers over there because he said, I'm taking the park away. The other thing I have to say is the old roller rink. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And that went from the old roller rink.
It's called the Columbus Arena or something?
Yeah.
The Columbus Auditorium.
Columbus Auditorium went from the old roller rink, and the Flytown guys know this because they went in there. Then it went to wrestling, wrestling, which was the, popular term of the day. And I had forgotten how even my grandfather loved wrestling. you know, and all the, you know, gorgeous George, and there's this one guy from Flytown that says there was a raccoon in the ring with him. And then it went to, after that, or before that, it was Billy Sunday. It was a evangelical place of worship. So during Prohibition. So those type of things were one place in one area just kind of kept evolving, like Sandy says. It goes from one thing to the next, and some of those surprising things.
What's at the Columbus? Where's the at that side of the Columbus Auditorium? What's there now?
It's the highway.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
How soon we forget. At the end of the documentary, you did a great job of comparing then and now. That was very interesting. Mary, we have an email right now from Caitlin. Wants you to know how the gay community and its history in that in the Short North has been featured in the documentary. It's mentioned many times.
Yeah, we do mention it. Basically, in the '70s, when you see a lot of new folks moving in, there were a lot of gay folks, and there was some tension between the older generation that had been there, and you know. There were a lot of people who worked very hard in Victorian Village, Italian Village, to bring these two groups together. And I think today when you see kind of the beautiful homes that have, you know, resulted from everybody's hard work, you know, this was a really great partnership. And, you know, I think you saw two sides of it where, you know, one group was, you know, just they were older and, you know, they really didn't have the means to fix up their homes, and these folks did. And I think you get a great partnership in the end when it's all done.
What surprised you in the course of your research, in the course of producing it?
Well, for me, what really surprised me was how open everybody was. This really was a community project. It's, you know, the community, as we interviewed people, they were the ones that really generated the stories that we followed. So as we were interviewing people, you know, they would say something, and I thought, we need to include this. So, you know, it was not, you know, it was interviewing people. It was people who provided, you know, photography. People just might have provided some information or passed on a name. I couldn't believe how open people were. They just, you know, come over to my house and look at my photos. You know, it just, that happened over and over again. And, you know, this is our documentary. This is our community's documentary. We, as a community, created it.
And, Cindy, how did it inform you for the future segments in the six-part series?
Well, it really helped us create a kind of a working kind of platform, I think. Mary's already started on two other documentaries, basically, because it's so intertwined.
Yeah.
You can't just look at the Short North. You have to look at downtown. You have to look at the University District as well. So it's one of those things that has given us kind of a platform to start with. But it's also kind of in some ways reinventing the wheel every time you come out, because it's kind of a different set of voices and a different set of stories. You know, there are certain things that come out. We have visionaries like Sandy. We had one in German Village. We have one Sandy here. We had one in Goodale, you know, that created the park. So there are certain themes that kind of recreate or, you know, weave through every documentary.
Yeah, for me in the documentary, Dr. Goodale and kind of bookended it, you know, one side, and Sandy Wood at the other end. I didn't know if you thought about that when you were doing it and producing it that way.
Well, definitely both men were visionaries. You know, when you look at Columbus at the turn of, you know, the 20th century, it was a place that was very dirty, a lot of industry. A lot of, you know, most of the, you know, trees have been cut down. You're looking at an area that, you know, a lot of people are coming into. And, you know, you had a man who thought, you know, we need a park, you know, that we need a place to get away from all of this. And, you know, I think throughout time there are folks like that just keep appearing.
And it's still there. It's great to see those old photographs of the entrance to the park, and then then you see them now, aged and aged and whatnot. Sandy, when you first started out here developing it, you would actually go to people personally and try to talk them into moving into one of your buildings.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How hard is it to get people?
I not only went and talked to them, I begged them. And went out and scouted businesses to come in and all that. It was a little bit hard at first, and we did a study of who moved into the Short North to live, and we thought there'd be demographics we could duplicate, and there weren't. The people that moved into the Short North were psychologically maybe looking for a place where there was activity in the middle of what was happening, but there wasn't a demographic that you could trace. They lived in, they worked in Westerville and lived in the Short North.
So how did you know where to go find them?
I didn't. I just went out and started looking.
And asking.
Right.
What's next? Cindy, what's the next?
What is next? We have a documentary about German Village that is in the works right now. And it will air later this year. Yes, in fall. Thank you. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we're kind of seeing which has the most material to go from there. So
On April 22nd, I think there's a town hall forum.
Yes,
at WOSU COSI Studios, that will be where we'll be talking about this further. If you want more information about the project, go to columbusneighborhoods.org and tell your story.
Absolutely.
Every neighborhood has a story. It doesn't have to be just one of the six that's shown in the documentary. You can go to WOSU.org for that. You can go to WOSU.org/allsides for a link to everything. That is the All Sides link. Any parting comments about this experience? Because tonight's the premiere.
It is. Well, I wanted to give a big thank you to our crew, our videographers, Jason Perkins. He did an amazing job lighting the interviews, shooting a lot of time-lapse photography. Bill Bullock did a lot of the B-roll. And the videography is amazing. Our audio crew, all the people that help promote this, you know, the program. I hope it's a big success, and I hope people really feel proud about their community.
Cindy?
Just a big shout-out to our funders. And this is a station-wide effort. We would not be able to do any of this without our funders. State Auto came on when we had no idea what we were doing, and they said, sure, yeah, we'll be able to do that. Chase has come on. AEP has come on. But also our underwriting team has really, really done a great work of being able to partner and say this is what we want to do. And, without them, we really couldn't do this. We couldn't do one, much less six. So we really want to give a shout-out to them.
Sandy, you have just about a minute left.
Well, you know, I'm reminded that we've had a lot of people come and look at the Short North because it has become kind of a model. And I have to remind them over and over again that it was bottom-up. It wasn't top-down. And the legitimacy of coming from the bottom up and organizing within the community and working together, I think, is the story of the Short North. And it's cities often think that a developer is going to come in and do it for them. It sometimes happens, but it's not as good as a bottom up.
Okay, if you want to learn more about the Short North tonight, 8 p.m. WOSU. We'll premiere Columbus Neighborhoods, The Short North. We're in the Cup of Joe in The Short North today to talk about it live. And if you want to join us, we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.